Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. All right, well, welcome back, folks. As you know, that debt is fraud. It's now or never. Learn, pray, act. Your campaign needs to begin today. And imagine if we actually had our part of government, the Department of Justice, you having your attorney general office within, every state that has actually got a team that is focused on holding every public servant accountable to their oath of office. We are living in a time where the term honor amongst thieves is being imbued in all government levels. Welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
So, last Thursday, yours truly spent the whole show talking about how we could actually have really great representation, but it would require we the people. And I think I marginalized that. I think I did point out that we would have a direct, communication, with social media and so forth. It would be a direct messaging, a DM, right? And it would actually be limited.
That would be nice.
It would be limited messaging as well. And as a matter of fact, what should happen is that you should actually, in real time, see your transmission that you sent to your representative and be able to go to the accounting sheet and see there's your name. And that is, and if, you know what, if you have a voter number, if the state's created a voter number, then you'd only have to know people by their voter number. And so everybody would be able to go and quickly look up their voter number and say, I don't like secrecy. I don't like secrecy. So I believe that anything that people do for secret is not for good. You know, there's one thing that's considered national security that people shouldn't be dealing with. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
I believe that when it comes down to when you vote for a person, when you vote on a matter or an issue, it should be public knowledge. Because there's nothing you should be voting, whether you vote for it or vote against it, it doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter to anybody, whether you vote for this person or that person. Everything has to be in support of the Constitution. There's no way we should ever be engaged in a vote that would actually violate the Constitution. So in other words, when your representative is telling you a matter at the county level, that matter would actually have to be within those enumerated powers. It's not like, hey, do we want to, invoke socialism? No, it would be a matter of, do we want to amend the Constitution to engage, in social welfare, in these types of things? That would be the matter. And so bottom line, everybody would publicly, openly, engage with the representation against it or not. This is how, if this is not a democracy, but this is the closest thing of giving we the people a direct representation and a voice. Because again, the beauty is this, folks. When you look at America on the whole, from state to state, the only thing that's going to save America is the heartland, the good people of America in those flyover states. Because when it comes down to federal voice, each state has its own voice. Mm-hmm. Even though you may have a body of representation in the House of Representatives, that voice is constantly being constrained by the state from allowing anything wrong to occur. Especially if we actually get our state legislatures to actually take back their suffrage in the Senate. We do this we do this one thing, and this is one of the reasons why I'm working with Tammy and working with the legislators of the state to come up with a time in the next month or two to have a roundtable, to have a digital virtual roundtable on why they, our state legislatures are refusing to demand suffrage over the Senate. Now, we're going through this, you and I, in the notes on the Constitutional Convention. And it is very clear that the Senate's representation is the state legislature. In other words, when the Constitution says the state's equal suffrage, that means that the state legislative body, the state legislature, has suffrage in that Senate. They were people of few words. They knew that the state's suffrage meant state legislature. They didn't have to type it. They knew that they were writing on parchment. They didn't have to say, as we write on parchment, this is, you know, what we're going to tell you. They don't go into those details. They only put the succinct information that needed to be understood. And so when the people's suffrage in the House of Representatives, and it's the state legislature suffrage. So, again, I was trying to do this quickly. We have to start getting the state legislatures to start standing up and working together. And I think the only way we're going to do this, because it will be killed in one state or the other. But if we actually start crossing and pollinating this and communicating across state boundaries of state legislatures and so forth, this will help get the word out. And as soon as these state legislatures take back their suffrage in the Senate, things will start dramatically changing. And actually, this would affect Trump's ability to do bad things.
Mm-hmm.
His ability to actually ramrod a digital currency down our throats. His ability to start doing these things that he should not be doing. I mean, everybody loves the fact that he's going to be lowering our taxes in some ways or what have you. But we're all being thrown into the control of the globalists. Anyway, so where we left off, because we were really talking about representation, right? And we were in the middle of Mr. Madison's diatribe that kind of put us, you know, into this, put me into a tizzy on representation. And so what I'm going to do is, instead of remembering so long ago what Madison started off with, this is about being admitted into this union, states' admissions and representation. And so this is what was read. And I'll read the first part, and then you can read the last part.
Okay.
Mr. Madison expressed his apprehensions that if the proper foundation of government was destroyed by substituting an equality in place of a proportional representation, no proper superstructure would be raised. If the small states really wished for a government armed with the powers necessary to secure their liberties and to enforce obedience on the larger members as well as on themselves, he could not help thinking them extremely mistaken in their means. He reminded them of the consequences of laying existing confederation on improper principles. All the principal parties to its complication joined immediately in mutilating and fettering the government in such a manner that it was disappointed. It disappointed every hope placed upon it. He appealed. This is interesting because he's writing this. So he's saying, he himself, Madison, appealed to the doctrine and arguments used by themselves on a former occasion. It had been very properly observed by Mr. Patterson that representation was expedient by which the meeting of people themselves was rendered unnecessary, and that representatives ought therefore to bear a proportion to the votes which their constituents, if convened, would respectively have. This is what I've been saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly why I went into the diatribe on Thursday about representation. They didn't have the ability for real time with electronic communications and everybody having a computer on their hip or at least some type of an app that would allow you to actually, you know, look at the issue and provide direct feedback to your representative, whether you're for or against it. if they made it easy and they made it fully transparent so that, you know, there's no need for it to be hacked or what have you, because everything that we would need to do, oh, by the way, after every vote, the due diligence must be on the people, because an instant audit can be done on every issue that you vote on. Does that make sense? If it's all posted, everybody can go and verify, yes. And those people that find any changes, it just takes one. It should only take one person to say, that's not how I voted. Instantly, the whole thing is stopped and a full audit, a forensic audit is done on what happened. Why did that vote not get properly done? And it all needs to be very transparent, because I'm telling you, folks, if we demand full transparency and we demand that we have a system that can provide that transparency, we'll get it. We are the fountain of political power. Anyway, back to Madison. Madison was not this remark as applicable to one branch of the representatives as to the other, but it had been said that the government would, in its operation, partly federal, partly national, and although in the latter respect, the representatives of the people ought to be in proportion to the people, yet the former, it ought to be according to the number of states. If there was a solidity in this distinction, it was ready to abide by it, if there was none to ought to be abandoned. Now, again, they're working at this juncture, because they're kind of moving forward in having two separate representations of equal representation in the Senate, and that the people would be represented by apportionment. And so he's just trying to point out that by these basic principles, you have all the protection you need. It's not about being worried about, you know, having people, a better representation for the people. Anyway, so this is where we move forward, and this is where you kind of take over. So go ahead.
Are we at yet?
Yeah, in all cases where, yeah. So I read the big section of what you already read. If there was none, it ought to be abandoned. Then you carry up for, in all cases where the general government is to act on the people, let the people be represented and the votes be proportional. In all cases where the government is to act on the states as such, in like manner as Congress now act on them, let the states be represented by the votes being equal. You with me?
Yep.
Okay.
This was the true ground of compromise, if there was any ground at all. But he denied that there was any ground. He called for a single instance in which the general government was not to operate on the people individually. The practicality of making laws with coercive sanctions for the states as political bodies had been exploded on all hands. He observed that the people of the large states would in some way or other secure to themselves a weight proportion to the importance accruing from their superior numbers. If they could not affect it by a proportional representation in the government, they would probably accede to no government which did not, in great measure, depend for its efficacy on their voluntary cooperation, in which case they would indirectly secure their object. The existing Confederacy proved that where the acts of the general government were to be executed by the particular governments, the latter had a weight in proportion to their importance. No one would say that either in Congress or out of Congress, Delaware had equal weight with Pennsylvania. If the latter was to supply 10 times as much money as the former, and no compulsion could be used, it was of 10 times more importance that she should voluntarily furnish the supply. In the Dutch Confederacy, the votes of the province were equal, but Holland, which supplies about half the money, governs the whole republic. He enumerated the Holland objections against an equality of votes in the second branch, notwithstanding the proportional representation in the first, the minority could negative the will of the majority of the people. Two, they could extort measures by making them a condition of their asset, assent to other necessary measures. 3, they could obtrude measures on the majority by virtue of the peculiar powers which would be vested in the Senate. 4, the evil, instead of being cured by time, would increase with every new state that should be admitted, as they must all be admitted on the principle of equality. 5, the perpetuity it would give to the preponderance of the northern against the southern scale was a serious consideration. It seemed now to be pretty well understood that the real difference of interest lay not between the large and small, but between the north and south southern states. The institution of slavery and its consequences formed in the line of discrimination. There were 5 states on the south, 8 on the northern side of this line. Should a proportional representation take place, it was true, the north side would still outnumber the other, but not in the same degree as this time, and every day would tend towards an equilibrium.
Yeah, okay, so I honestly think, because at this point in time, they still hadn't worked out the final compromise between the north and the south. So he's basically saying that it would, by doing it this way, there would be this maintained equilibrium, and he didn't realize that more and more states would be joining the Union as the Northwest, because there were lots of areas in the Northwest that were ready to... What was the first state to join the Union? It wasn't a southern state.
Yeah.
It was Vermont. And then the next state was Kentucky and then Tennessee, because those were the, and those were really populated areas as well. But then all of a sudden, the rest of the states started coming in. Louisiana was just, you know, out of the clear blue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Louisiana was added to the Union. And let me see here. If I go into the state, is it control statehood order? No, so let me look at the statehood order. So the original order was Vermont, then Kentucky, then Tennessee, and then it was Ohio, then Louisiana, like I told you, then Indiana. Indiana was 1816. So now we saw 2 states going into the Northwest Territory, then Mississippi, then Illinois, then Alabama, then Maine, and Missouri was going to join the Union as a free state. Missouri was going to join the Union as a free state. And this is when the South realized that they were going to lose their edge. Because things were not cast in stone that you had to have a slave state in the certain area. That's what the Missouri Compromise did. Every state had its right of self-destiny. They got a chance to determine whether they wanted to have slavery or not. And over time, all things being equal, the repugnance of slavery only grew. And they actually started to see this. So even though in Madison's head, he thought that there was an equilibrium that would be maintained or actually created, I don't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Mr. Wilson then kind of pipes in and blah, 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 blah. And so we kind of continue on going through, you know, the days as, you know, they talk about these different things. But as we go down to the end of Tuesday, July 17th, this is where they kind of start talking about magistrates and this framework of government and so forth, that they're going to actually create this new, different government where the people are and their representatives are in charge. And so this is actually where they start moving towards this concept of electors having a function within this government, instead of representatives choosing. So in other words, it would be a different person. Now, that's the part of the Constitution. The Constitution wanted to ensure that an elector was not the same person as your representative. They both represented you, but one would represent who to pick. The other would represent the governing, you know, the creation of laws, the removal of laws, those things. And so this is when they kind of dove into, and there was kind of a long conversation regarding the importance of the electors. And since we're kind of doing electors as importance, let me kind of, you know, tune you into this. This is Mr. Wilson. Do you see the little tab on, it's actually before July 18th. Mr. Martin is actually the one that's speaking above that. It's Mr. Williamson that was speaking. And then Mr. Wilson. It's Mr. Wilson. So this is kind of where they start talking about the magistrates. And I kind of have this all highlighted, folks. So from Mr. Wilson through Pinckney, Governor Morris, Colonel Mason, Mr. Wilson again, then Mr. Williamson, and then Mr. Martin, they started, talking pretty much about the magistrate, this body government, where they didn't have a division between the governing body. In other words, in the old Continental Congress and in Parliament and so forth, it was all a single representation. In other words, they voted by delegation. It was by state, and it didn't matter how many how many people lived in the state. All states were equal. And so, but the governing body took care of everything. They were the executive, they were the judiciary, and they were the lawmakers. So they were the magistrate. Continental Congress was the magistrate. It was just like having the king. And instead of the king was reduced to parliament, and the king went away, and the parliament had all control. They were the judge, the jury, they were the executioner, the executive, lawmakers. In other words, when you look at a magistrate, they're an all-powerful, single-focused body. They went down this path of actually trying to divide away from that, to actually create checks and balances. And by separating specific types of powers. So one of the things that they wanted to also do to create a check and balance in representation was the difference between an elector and a representative. And so let's start off with Mr. Martin in talking about the choosing of the electors. Go ahead.
I'm not sure where we're at. Okay.
Yeah, you're probably up a little bit. So
I was on Mr. Wilson.
Yeah, so we're technically on page 196. Yeah.
Okay.
Down towards the bottom. It's Mr. Martin, because Mr. Wilson, then Mr. Martin on 196. And so I'll go ahead and start while you're looking for it. Mr. Martin moved that the executive be chosen by electors appointed by the several legislatures of the individual states. So in other words, he thought that, okay, the state legislatures would choose the electors. So Mr. Broome seconded on the question. It passed in the negative. In other words, there were more no's. No. We don't want the state legislature to do this. And then, so Mr. Broome, on the question on the words to be chosen by the national legislature, it passed unanimously in the affirmative. So in other words, they said, okay, well, the national legislature would do that, not the state legislature. For the term of 7 years, postponed non-mem, or basically they proposed that it would be done for 7 years, that a elector would serve a term of 7 years. And Governor Morris and Mr. Houston, basically to carry into execution the national laws. So they're kind of going through these different things that they were dealing with. So Mr. Governor Morris then espoused the motion. The ineligibility proposed by the clause as it stood tended to destroy the great motive. We're actually going into break here. So anyway, we're kind of just going through this, and he's diving back into the magistrate. But just to give you the snapshot, so you kind of missed this, and we'll pick it up a little bit further down. They actually wanted, and they went away from the state legislature controlling the choosing of the president. And they wanted, they were moving towards the national. We'll get into this a little bit more when we come right back. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, welcome back. And so where we left, what we're doing is we're kind of covering these dynamics of these motions of making these minor little changes for this. Things were kind of moving in some ways kind of fast, but they were still talking about the framework of government. And even though they had pretty much talked about having a separate judiciary, a separate executive, a separate legislative, they still hadn't completely settled on it. And so actually towards the very bottom of page 197, Mr. Madison kind of speaks up. And actually, I'm going to lead with what Mr. Sherman basically stated. Mr. Sherman considered such a tenure as by no means safe or admissible. As the executive magistrate is now re-eligible, he will be on good behavior as far as it be necessary. If he behaves, he will be continued. If otherwise, displaced on a succeeding election. Now, Madison then kind of pokes in this into more theoretical, what are they doing? What are we really trying to do here? And he says, if it be essential to the preservation of liberty that the legislative, executive, and judicial powers be separate, it is essential to the maintenance of the separation that they should be independent of each other. You with me on that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go ahead and take it from there.
The executive cannot be independent of the legislature if dependent on the pleasure of that branch for a reappointment. Why was it determined that the judges should not hold their places by such a tenure? Because they might be tempted to cultivate the legislature by an undue compliance that thus render the legislature the virtual expositor as well, the maker of the laws, in like manner, a dependent of the executive on the legislature would render it the executor as well as the maker of laws. And then, according to the observation of Montesquieu, tyrannical laws may be made that they may be executed in a tyrannical manner. There was an analogy between the executive and judiciary department in several respects. The latter executed the laws in certain cases as the former did in others. The former expanded and applied them for certain purposes as the latter did for others. The difference between them seemed to consist chiefly in two circumstances. One, the collective interest and security were much more in the power belonging to the executive than to the judiciary department. Two, in the administration of the former, much greater latitude is left to opinion and discretion than in the administration of the latter. But if the second consideration proves that it will be more difficult to establish a rule sufficiently precise for trying the
executive,
then the judges, and forms an objection to the same tenure of office, both considerations prove that it might be more dangerous to suffer a union between the executive and legislative powers than between the judiciary and legislative powers. He conceived it to be absolutely necessary, a well-constituted republic, that the two first should be kept distinct and independent of each other. Whether the plan proposed by the motion was a proper one was another question, as it depended on the practicality of instituting a tribunal for impeachments as certain and as adequate in the one case as in the other. On the other hand, respect for the mover entitled his proposition to a fair hearing and discussion until a less objectionable expedient should be applied for guarding against a dangerous union of the legislative and executive departments.
Okay, so Mattis is making the case of, you know, where alliances occur. And so what would happen if the judiciary, instead of creating an alliance, if the judiciary, out of the clear blue, had written documents that allowed them to interpret the law, in other words, redefine the law, as well as make law, then they wouldn't need to create an alliance with the legislative body.
Right.
But clearly, Madison is pointing out that there needs to be this complete independence for liberty to be preserved. Well, guess what happens when all of a sudden the other branches of government start assuming legislative powers? There goes liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And so the judiciary has been getting away with creating law and executing law, as well as the, you know, the executive creating law and executing law and making, you know, determinations, you know, redefining. I mean, they're all basically doing what they can get away with.
Yeah.
And the, as Madison stated, the very front end of this, the very beginning of this, if it be essential to the preservation of liberty that the legislative, executive, and judiciary powers be separate, it is essential to a maintenance of the separation that they should be independent of each other. In other words, the only body that can create law is the representative body or Congress, period. The courts cannot create law. The president cannot create law. The president cannot determine whether somebody is guilty of a law or whether they're not guilty of a law. That is left to the courts. So, or guilty of violating the law. So, it became clearer and clearer as they were kind of moving, because they're still in flux. This is, the Constitution is not done by any stretch of the means. But the big part of this is that they were really framing, and Madison was backing out again and saying, hey, look, you know, we need to make sure that there is full independence and separation. Anyway, so they continue on, and they go on and on and on, and what I want to do is I kind of want to jump down to another little snapshot of the electors. This is July 19th, and this is Mr. Rufus King that basically wants to talk a little bit about the Electoral College. And so I'm not sure if you're there, but if you are, let me know.
Think so.
Okay, so yeah, it's Mr. Governor Morris that starts off the day, Mr. Randolph and Mr. King. And so the highlighted part is where they start talking about the electors. Yep, go ahead.
There's a drop down. Do I use the drop down?
Well, so Mr.
Electors did not like the...
Yeah, Mr. King did not like the ineligibility. Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. King did not like the ineligibility. He thought there was a great force in the remark of Mr. Sherman that he... who has proved himself to be most fit for an office, ought not to be excluded by the Constitution from holding it. He would therefore prefer any other reasonable plan that could be substituted. He was much disposed to think that in such cases, the people at large would choose wisely. There was indeed some difficulty arising from the improbability of a general concurrence of the people in favor of any one man. On the whole, he was of opinion that an appointment by electors chosen by the people for the purpose would be liable to fewest objections.
Okay, so who, basically, he kind of exposed this elector, these electors in choosing the president, and he kind of exposed where there would be the least objections if they, the electors were chosen by the people. Saw that, right? Right there, mm-hmm. the very last. On the whole, he was of the opinion that an appointment by electors chosen by the people, in other words, so the electors choose the president and the people choose the electors.
Mm-hmm.
This is how this whole is starting to come together. And as we move through this, we're going to find that the intent behind the Electoral College is that the people are to choose them. Oh, well, okay, so that's how it's supposed to be. Well, that's not how it is today. And there's no amendment in choosing of the electors in Article 2 or in the 12th Amendment. The people are still to choose them. It's only that the state legislatures are to determine the time, place, and how we are to choose our electors, the manner.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, the state legislature has the authority to set the date, time, and the mechanism of how we, the people, will choose our electors. But that's not what we do today. The state legislatures have handed the choosing of the electors to whom?
To the parties.
There you go. Now, is the party the people?
No.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, the party is kind of like this little club. When you really look at the party system today, because the party itself, the grassroots party, this is the only thing that they actually have their fingers in government on, because the parties are right now not holding any public servant accountable to their oath. In other words, we the people can't go to the party and say, hey, these guys are violating their oath, they're violating the platform, they're violating the Constitution. The party is completely impotent because the state legislatures have created laws to protect them from them. And I know mm-hmm. this because I had this conversation in 2018, 2019 with Frank Ethorn regarding the ability of the party to actually excommunicate a person out of the party if they're in office and they violate their oath and call for and demand the removal of that person from office. And he says, right now we have laws that protect them. We mm-hmm. can't touch them. The party has no power to do that. And I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. And folks, this is how the party, when I say the party, I mean the party in power, not the grassroots party. Because when you really think about it, we the people, you'd think that we the people being the grassroots of the party. No, you have actually a political class where they're divided along ideological lines, but they're not being held accountable because they've made themselves immune from the grassroots. In other words, they need the grassroots to get elected. But once they're elected, they want to make sure that they can't be held accountable.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so this is why this is so important. This is why going through and hearing the references continuously being brought up that the electors need to be chosen by the people. Mr. Patterson, go ahead. Let's go through this because I think this is where they kind of discuss a little bit of where the, you know, why it's important for the people and so forth and so on. So go ahead.
Mr. Patterson's ideas nearly coincided, he said, with those of Mr. King. He proposed that the executive should be appointed by electors to be chosen by the states in a ratio that would allow one elector to the smallest and three to the largest states. It seems to be the unanimous sense that the executive should not be appointed by the legislature unless he be rendered ineligible a second time. He perceived with pleasure that the idea was gaining ground of an election immediately by the people.
So in other words, not an election of the president, an election of the electors. Okay. All right. So Mr. Madison,
if it be a fundamental principle of free government that the legislative, executive, and judiciary powers should be separately exercised, it is equally so that they be independently exercised. There is the same and perhaps greater reason why the executive should be independent of the legislature than why the judiciary should then yeah, should. Yes. A coalition of the two former powers would be more immediately and certainly dangerous to public liberty. It is essential that the appointment of the executive should either be drawn from some source or held by some tenure that would give him a free agency with regard to the legislature. This could not be if he was to be appointable from time to time by the legislature. It was not clear that an appointment in the first instance, even with an eligibility afterwards, would not establish an improper connection between the two departments. Certain it was that the appointment would be attended with intrigues and contentions that ought not to be unnecessarily admitted. He was disposed, for these reasons, to refer the appointment to some other source. People at large was, in his opinion, the fittest in itself. It would be as likely as any that could be devised to produce an executive magistrate of distinguished character. The people generally could only know and vote for some citizen whose merits had rendered him an object of general attention and esteem. There was one difficulty, however, of a serious nature attending an immediate choice by the people. The right of suffrage was much more diffusive in the northern than the southern states, and the latter could have no influence in the election on the score of the Negroes. Substitution of electors obviated this difficulty and seemed on the whole to be liable to fewest objections.
Okay, so he's kind of pointing out that there's the choice of people choosing electors, because you're looking at representation, right? Representation, as the southern states wanted it, they wanted to have a bolstered number to where, you know, it was adding 3/5 for every slave. And so that would give the fewer people in the South more of a concentrated control over the elector, and as well as their representation. And it would be converse, where it would actually be more representative of the people instead of, you know, when you look at it 1-to-1, this equality, this concept of equality of voting power. And so anyway, so he's kind of pointing out that there's, you know, there's a little bit of things we need to be considering here, but Mr. Gary now of Massachusetts then pipes in.
Mr. Gary, if the executive is to be elected by the legislature, he certainly ought not to be re-eligible. This would make him absolutely dependent. He was against a popular election. The people are uninformed. The people are uninformed and would be misled by a few designing men. He urged the expediency of an appointment of the executive by electors to be chosen by the state executives. The people of the states will then choose the first branch. The legislatures of the states, the second branch of the national legislature, and the executives of the states, the national executive. This, he thought, would form a strong attachment in the states to the national system. The popular mode of electing the chief magistrate would certainly be the worst of all. If he should be so elected and should do his duty, he will be turned out for it like Governor Bowdoin in Massachusetts and President Sullivan in New Hampshire.
Okay, so he's kind of pointing out that, you know, if you actually had a tiered level to where, you know, a group of people would create your your state legislature. Your state legislature would then choose the executive, and then the state executive would choose the national executive. And so he was kind of creating, you know, this far removed point of how that would be. But I still believe, and this is, let's just keep going on, because they actually kind of went down this path of taking the a motion for vote. And so anyway, Mr. Ellsworth then moved to strike out the appointment by the national legislature and insert, quote, to be chosen by electors appointed by the legislatures of the states in the following ratio, to wit, one for each state not exceeding 200,000 inhabitants, two for each state yet number and not exceeding 300,000, and three for each state exceeding 300,000. And so Mr. Broom seconded the motion, and Mr. Rutledge was opposed to all the modes except the appointment by the national legislature would be sufficiently independent, if not be re-eligible. So Mr. Gary goes back and says, well, I prefer this motion of Mr. Ellsworth to an appointment by the national legislature or by the people, though not to an appointment by the state executives. So in other words, they're still bouncing around of how they wanted to choose the president. And, you know, how these electors, because these electors, it's like an idea that was thrown at the wall and it kind of starts, you know, sliding down the wall. It wasn't sticking. And so they had to work on it. They had to, you know, it's still too wet. It's still sliding down. They wanted to get something that everybody could agree upon. And that's what we're looking at right here in the middle of July. They were still struggling on how to actually come up with these electors and going through this. Now, and they're talking, and they're still using the term magistrate and you know, loosely using that. And so... I'm just cruising through this, folks. There's a lot of stuff that's highlighted that goes all the way down to page 216. And so let's kind of move beyond all of this because we got a little bit more time. And let's get down to July 23rd, towards the very end. Actually, if you go to July 24th, two people above, Mr. Hayton and Mr. Spate, basically kind of talk about the electors here. So they both moved or presented and moved. Go ahead.
I don't know where they're at.
Okay, so I'm there. So Mr. Houston and Mr. Spate moved that the appointment of the executive by electors chosen by the legislature of the states be reconsidered. Mr. Houston urged the extreme inconveniency and considerable expense of drawing together men from all the states for the single purpose of electing the chief magistrate. On the question, without any debate, I. So that basically it was, you know, kind of carrying on, and they were going to move forward with, you know, that at that point. Now, they come back the very next day, and they bring this up again. The appointment of the executive by electors reconsidered. Mr. Houston, are you with me now? I'm on page 230. Mr. Houston moved that the appointed by the national legislature instead of electors appointed by the state legislatures. According to the last decision of the mode, he dwelt chiefly on the improbability that capable men would undertake the service of electors from the more distant states. And why is that? Because the further away you are, the further away you are from the kitchen, the less you get fed, the less information you get. And so they were really concerned about, you know, having it done that way, because then those people, you know, in the further states would probably not be able to understand the importance of why and so forth. So anyway, Mr. Spate seconded the motion. Then Mr. Gary, go ahead.
Mr. Gary opposed it. He thought there was no ground to apprehend the danger urged by Mr. Houston. The election of the executive magistrate will be considered as of vast importance and will excite great earnestness. The best men, the governors of the states, will not hold it derogatory from their character to be the electors. If the motion should be agreed to, it will be necessary to make the executive ineligible a second time, in order to render him independent of the legislature, which was an idea extremely repugnant to his way of thinking.
Okay. So they're going to continue to debate this. And here's the real point, folks. The choosing of the president took a lot of effort and a lot of time, and might I even say some gnashing of teeth. They did not. I mean... I don't think I've seen anywhere here where they, you know, anybody thought it was a good idea for a popular vote for the people to choose the president. And yet, what do we have today? We have a popular vote that the parties choose the electors, and we've actually instituted a democracy. But the parties have played their games with primaries to down-select to ensure that no other party can play in the general.
Mm-hmm.
Because bottom line, they knew that if they had a monopoly of the voters in the parties, then there was no way in heck an independent party could ever mount a real challenge and unseat anybody, as Thomas Jefferson did with a new party using the Republican Party to unseat the Federalist in 1800. That's what happens when you actually have open access to your political system, where we the people can actually have open access to running for office. But we've allowed the parties and the state legislative parties to actually lock down and create a dominance of the Republican and Democrat parties. This is why the system is designed the way it is, so that they have maintained control. And so who controls these two parties? The globalists. It's the globalists that control this. This is why the globalists now have control over the Senate. The globalists have obtained more and more control, you know, as we've continued down this path. So, anyway, let's go ahead and read the next one, Mr. Strong.
Okay. Mr. Strong supposed that there would be no necessity, if the executive should be appointed by the legislature, to make him ineligible a second time, as the new elections of the legislature will have intervened, and he will not depend for his second appointment on the same set of men as his first was reported from. It had been suggested that gratitude for his past appointment would produce the same effect as dependence for his future appointment. He thought very differently. Besides, this objection would lie against the electors, who would be objects of gratitude as well as the legislature. It was of great importance not to make the government too complex, which would be the case if a new set of men like the electors should be introduced into it. He thought also that the first characters of the states would not feel sufficient motives to undertake the office of electors.
So because it seems a little complex, then it would be harder to bamboozle people. And the reality is, because Mr. Strong is just making this point, that by going down this path of doing this and trying to understand how it's to be done, over time, people just didn't care. They only started aligning ideologically to the party instead of actually looking at who would serve the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why we just ran out of time. But this is why it's so important that we actually start instituting tests to determine that these people actually understand the Constitution, what they're supposed to do in office. We'll just kind of wrap this up, and I think what we'll end up doing is we'll move on, because I wanted to give you a good snapshot of how heavily they debated this concept of the Electoral College. So when we come back tomorrow, we will probably, you know, move on to the next issue down the road here. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.